Welcome, everyone. It's my great pleasure to introduce Kenneth Green today, those of us who know him fondly as Casey, as he presents the results of the Campus Computing Project survey for this year. He is the founding director of the Campus Computing Project, the largest continuing study of the role of computing, e-learning, and information technology in American higher education. CIOs participate in this survey every year, and in this era where we're all focusing so much on data and analytics, it is wonderful for us to have this terrific resource to inform our thinking and to help us engage our campus in understanding what's happening with our technical world and e-learning. With that, let me introduce Casey Green. Thank you.
Teresa, thank you for the introduction, for the kind comments. Teresa has been very kind as the moderator of the CIO list to allow me to listen in and occasionally post some data from the survey, which I hope have been useful and productive to all of you. I am indebted to many of you because I know that many of you labor long, dark hours to try to complete my survey. And so not only am I indebted to you, but I think the rest of us here are indebted to you. I was once accused of making these things up. I assure you, I don't make up the data. So this is the 2012 Campus Computing Survey. It's the 23rd. The project was initially launched in 1990 as an IT planning and policy project, benchmarking project for colleges and universities, and that really is its focus. I'm going to go through a lot of data today. For those of you who are eager to get these slides, they will be posted on the Campus Computing website tomorrow in PDF format, full color. Don't waste your time trying to take bad pictures, and please don't try to blind me with a flash. That's all right. And let me add a shout out to those of you in our listening audience here in the U.S. and across the globe. Thank you for joining us today. Very quickly, in addition to acknowledging those of you who have labored to help fill out the survey, I want to acknowledge our corporate sponsors. We have some 38. And it's their support for this project that makes it possible for me to help bring data to this community about a wide array of IT planning and policy issues. Real quickly, let me explain the methodology. As we've done in year past this year, we've had 453 two- and four-year public and private colleges across the U.S. participate in the survey. It's an online survey. We send an email to the CIO or senior IT officer. Sometimes he or she completes it. Sometimes he or she passes it on and then brings it up for review. The survey period essentially a one-month, little over, beginning September 20th. And in terms of reliability, validity, consistency, 70% of the institutions that participated this year also participated last year. And that's been fairly consistent. We have a high return rate each year in terms of last year's participants going forward. Market segmentation, we have very good representation across all sectors and segments. As you read this chart, the way to read it is the Department of Education says there are 168 public research and doctoral institutions. We had 72 participate in the survey, which meant we had 43% of the population. You can see the other segments below. This next chart explains why many of you felt you were getting spam from me every other day at the end of the survey period. I feel each year when the survey goes out in the last week, I find myself feeling like many of you who have a 16 or a 17-year-old child who's on curfew, wondering, confident maybe that the child will make it home, less certain if the child will make it home by curfew, by the agreed-upon time of arrival. And that certainly was the case again this year. 50% of the surveys arrived the last week of the cycle, and 20% arrived after deadline. Now, admittedly, I factor a little of this in. That doesn't mean I'm always comfortable that last Friday before close when I've only got half of the number that I would like to have and half the number I get. So as I get older and my cardiac response gets a little more pressured, you would do me a great favor if you could perhaps try to get the surveys in a little earlier next year. But again, I want to thank all of you who labored, and those of you who didn't, you're skating on their efforts, so next year participate in the survey. Thank you. Quickly, the highlights from this year, and then we'll go into it. We've asked for a number of years, tell us IT priorities, and this year, making a return after a number of years of absence, back on the stage, CIOs told us that the top IT priority for their institutions in and across sectors was assisting faculty with the instructional integration of information technology. We'll explain how we got to this as we move through the slides. Very interesting, and many of you will notice that's very different than the numbers and the priorities that emerged from the EDUCOST top 10 list this year. I'll explain that as well. We saw big gains in the deployment of mobile apps again this year. Number of campuses that activated mobile apps from last year to this or will have activated them this year jumped by about 20%. We saw budget cuts continue, but this year, fortunately, fewer of you told us you experienced budget cuts than last year. It's not to say that there is not pain in the community, particularly for public institutions, but we are not experiencing as much pain in aggregate as we were experiencing when things imploded in 2008, 2009, 2010, and 2011. We're getting very mixed, and I would say painful, assessments from CIOs and concurrently presidents and provosts about the effectiveness of campus investments in information technology. In 2011 and 2012, I conducted two national surveys for Inside Higher Ed, one of presidents and one of provosts. And while these were not technology surveys, I believe it was probably to date the largest survey in which presidents and provosts were asked about IT issues, the value of campus investments. Those numbers were not great. When we overlay those with the exact question with CIOs, the data clearly indicate we have a problem conveying, documenting, finding evidence of effectiveness of our investments in IT in a number of different metrics. We are still searching for the cloud in terms of the deployment, particularly in the parts of the cloud opportunities that would offer the highest value in terms of institutional performance and return on investment, and also to help us control costs, reduce the money we spend on certain applications that could be moved to other parts of the IT enterprise. And not surprisingly, we continue to see transitions in the LMS market. It remains very volatile. Lots of campuses doing an LMS review, lots of campuses doing a bake-off, lots of shifts going on. So I've begun these presentations for the last decade by talking about the single most important IT issue confronting institutions. Beginning in 2000, we asked IT officers, here's a list of 10 items. Pick one as the single most important issue. And you can see for the first 4 years of that cycle, the number one issue was the instructional integration of information technology, assisting faculty with technology and instruction. And the first year we did it, two-fifths of the respondents said IT integration, followed by user support, and I would argue they're the flip side of the same coin in many ways. IT integration remained the top issue for 4 years, but it fell by about half. And then in 2004, we had a new champion, a new winner, and that was data and network security. And for the next 5 years, roughly from 20 to 30% is the leading issue, IT officers said, that's the top issue confronting my campus, and then there were some other issues that fell a little bit lower. And then something happened in 2010 and 2011. And what happened is we got a lot of clutter or a lot of noise because nothing jumped out. Nothing reached over 20%. We saw hiring qualified staff at 14 or 15% as the number one item. Dealing with replacing an aging infrastructure, instructional integration were high, but nothing jumped out the way it had earlier on. And that's not to say we didn't see some changes, for example, in terms of the leading items. Instructional integration still nominally at the top, but the numbers much lower than they had been earlier in the decade. And also we saw a big jump in mobile, not surprising. But look what happened this year. This year we changed the question to try and parse it a little bit more and understand where do IT officers see their priorities. So instead of saying pick one, we reframed the question. On a scale of 1 to 7, not important, very important, how important are these issues? I pick the issues, you tell me the importance. And notice, number one issue, three-quarters of you and your counterparts and your colleagues across all sectors and segments said, as they had said a decade earlier, our top issue is assisting faculty with the integration of IT in instruction. Number two issue, 70%, providing adequate user support. This feels like 2000 all over again. And it suggests to me, the number three item, hiring and retaining staff. The last time we saw hiring and retaining staff this highly ranked was during the dot-com era. And that was not during an economic downturn. That was at a time when technology companies were cherry-picking IT personnel from colleges and universities, including many of yours. So it talks about a very interesting landscape in terms of the top issues that you told me, admittedly on my list of issues, tell me what the priorities are, where the community sees key issues over the next 2 to 3 years. We saw some other things. Emergency communication in the wake of Virginia Tech and others, not so high for many institutions any longer. Upgrading, replacing ERP, only a quarter. And that sort of carried out as we look at some of the core data. Many institutions have been with their current provider for more than a decade and seem unlikely to migrate. Upgrading, replacing the campus network, only two-fifths. And yet these very high numbers, three-quarters saying instructional integration, 70% saying user support, 69% talking about hiring and retaining qualified IT staff is the top three. Shown graphically again, it's even more striking in terms of what these top issues are, responding to my survey and my prompts. When we disaggregate this data by sector, we see the same pattern. The instructional integration of information technology, highlighted in blue, all sectors, either the top, the second, or the third issue. User support, first, second, or third issue in each one. Hiring and user support the same way. So while the numbers may flip a little bit by sector and segment, a tremendous consistency within and across sectors about what these IT priorities are. And then finally, it raises the question, well, we had the EDUCAUSE top 10 list earlier this year. How is your list different from their list? Admittedly, the methodology is different. I presented a list of issues for CIOs to rank. The top 10 list was generated by a focus group with a panel and then went through a Delphi process to re-rank. But notice the differences. My number one issue is instruction. Instruction does not appear on the core data list. Their issue is upgrading professional skills. My number two issue is user support. Theirs is consumerization and bring your own devices. Top three that emerged from my survey, hiring, retaining, the closest thing to that is their number one, the EDUCAUSE top 10 list about professional skills, but that's for the people you have, not for the people you're trying to keep or the people you need to find, and we see other differences. Where these things begin to tie together, financing shows up, and generally similar, phrased differently, but similar issues, financing the replacement and financing IT strategically, also migrating to the cloud, higher through the top 10 list from EDUCAUSE, lower from the list generated by CIOs. I will cop to one sin of omission in this list, and that is I should have asked about analytics, because you're going to see some data as we go through this about the role of analytics as it relates to IT strategy. They become very important. Analytics will be on the list that will be presented to you next year. And then the next question becomes rating the IT infrastructure. We have asked you and your counterparts, tell us, what do you think you're doing exceptionally well on a scale of 1 to 7? And the top-ranked item consistently over the last decade is we've got a really good network. And we've got really good resources in our library. And we're doing pretty good with multimedia classrooms in terms of the scale of 1 to 7. These are over 5.5, the means in aggregate. User support services comes in as number 4 of doing well. But fortunately, we were not able to validate these data by asking students and faculty if they feel the same way. And that may or may not be that may be how CIOs see it. That may or may not be how their clients see it, with due respect. And then wireless networks came in high. And then you see we're going down. Emergency communication notification, we're doing well. Notice what's at the bottom. Digital dashboards and ERP analytics, not doing so well. Mobile apps and services for faculty. Research computing. Now, admittedly, that's probably more clustered by sector and segment. You will see some other data that begins to affirm this as we go through the presentation. We also then, as I said, took the elements from the Inside Higher Ed surveys that I conducted previously of presidents and provosts and took the exact same question to CIOs this year. Given the significant investment of information technology in campuses over the last several years, how would you rate the effectiveness of these investments, again, on a scale of 1 to 7, 1 not effective, 7 very effective? With the top three items, 60% of the CIOs said, we're doing very effective in terms of management information systems. We're doing also equally effectively in terms of library. And we're not doing too bad in terms of on-campus teaching. And then the next cluster became IT to support student services, academic support services, our online courses, and student recruitment. At the bottom, again, data and analytics, followed by research and scholarship, and then up from that, alumni and development efforts. What happens, however, when we do the overlay with presidents and provosts against CIOs on some of these same issues? And here, this should be a great cause of concern to the campus IT advocates, to campus IT officers, and to IT providers to the higher education community, because these numbers are not good for any of us. So notice, percentage of CIOs who say we're doing pretty well, very effective with instruction, is about 55%. It's barely half of provosts and just over two-fifths of presidents. Information systems, higher, three-fifths of CIOs, less than two-fifths of presidents and provosts. And analytics, the CIOs are even lower than their presidents and provosts. This is not a good message. Lots of different ways to try and parse it out. Is it because everybody is generally satisfied? There are a lot of people that said five instead of six. Is it that we have overpromised and underdelivered? Is it an issue of aspirations, of reach and grasp? Is it a failure to communicate in terms of IT officers and others about the effectiveness of IT investments? Excuse me. Whatever it is, it should be a cause for concern. And when we disaggregate these by sector and segment, excuse me, again, these numbers should also be a cause for concern. So when we ask by sector and segment, public and private, research university, master's institutions, presidents and provosts and CIOs, how would you rate the IT, the effectiveness of IT investments to support? These numbers are not good, but notice, the sector that has the least resources for IT is where we see the highest ratings accruance, and that's community colleges. Seem to feel a larger proportion of presidents, provosts, and CIOs in community colleges compared to elsewhere feel they get the best and most effective investment. And this is even as 94% of CIOs told me in my survey that they agree or strongly agree that technology has done much to improve instruction on my campus. Similarly, when we look at just private research universities on instruction, only one president in eight in private research universities rated the investment in IT to support instruction as being very effective. This is not a good message for us. And this should be a cause for concern for all of us if you are an IT advocate on your campus, if you're an IT officer, or if you're an IT provider to colleges and universities in the United States and elsewhere. Administrative systems, we see the same thing. We see higher numbers on the part of the CIOs generally, lower numbers on the part of presidents in terms of the effectiveness of the investment. That red line is at 50%. And again, the numbers for analytics even more cause for concern. Nobody's over 50% saying we are doing this well in terms of our investments. Let me turn to budget cuts. I said earlier the good news is big declines in the percentages that experienced budget cuts last year, upwards of half of public universities reported them. This year that fell to a third. So the number fell. We still have the case that about a third of public universities, four-year colleges and community colleges experienced budget cuts, less so for privates. And the real challenge is not just the cut this year, but the fact is that we've had the compounding consequences. Because you probably got cut in 2009, you got cut in 2010, and you got cut in 2011, and you may have had a mid-year cut as well. So even as you have fewer resources, there's been no let-up in demand. Higher costs and demand for security, more expectations and entitlement about mobility, bring in mobile apps, more bandwidth for wireless, more instructional support. All these issues stress out the budget, and by extension, stress out the folks that are doing IT on our campuses. We added a new item to the survey this year about IT expenditures. I've argued from this platform and others, we would need a team of forensic accountants to figure out how much money we spend on IT in American colleges and universities. We just don't know. And in the past, Core Data has looked at some of those on the revenue side. It seemed we just didn't have a handle on what some of the ERP expenditures might be. So this year with campus computing, I added a new question. How much money are you spending on ERP, meaning licensing and maintenance fees to technology providers. I want to emphasize, these numbers are at best night watchman numbers. Those of you who completed the survey, those of you who know how these contracts are structured, it's often difficult to parse out the cost of your finance system against your student information system or your HR system. So in that context, they represent best estimates. But if you take them as relative best estimates, these data become very interesting. We're spending a lot of money, nominally. These numbers vary, not surprisingly, by sector, because these licenses are often based by size. But what becomes interesting is that at least in four-year colleges, the ERP share, and I have an expansive definition of ERP, because it's not, for me, it's not just finance, accounting, and information, and HR, and student information systems. I would include LMS as part of an ERP, although most of the ERP providers typically are not the LMS providers. Alumni and development services as well, and the ancillary modules that go with that in terms of analytics and other stuff. But notice that we're about 7 to 8% across public and private baccalaureate and doctoral institutions, and community colleges, the sector that has the least resource typically for IT, they spend a third more proportionately on ERP than do four-year institutions and universities. The economic downturn has been a source of a catalyst for a lot of things, including a lot of churn in the organizational chart in terms of consolidations, people leaving, people coming. This past year, as in other years, about a third, this year 36% of the survey participants, told us we have reorganized our IT, central IT. Another 28% expect to reorganize in the next 2 years. And again, these numbers have been fairly consistent, ebbing and flowing just a number of one or two points each year. 16% who reorganized in the last 2 years expect to do it again. The catalyst for that could be money, consolidating organizations to save some money. Somebody leaves, somebody comes, a new president, a new provost arrives, and it's his or her prerogative to move the deck chairs around. Whatever it might be, we're seeing a lot of churn in the IT organizations on campuses across sector. And again, these numbers have changed little in the past couple of years. The good news about IT security is that generally it's been flat in the proportion of campuses that are reporting security breaches or security incidents over the past year compared to in trends in a couple of different categories. The theft of a computer or loss of a computer with confidential data, the hack attack on campus networks, identity management, computer virus and spyware. Our users are getting smarter about this than they were some years ago, hopefully. Those numbers are flat. Social networking has been an issue, not that campuses necessarily endorse social networking, but the activities of our students on social networks can create security issues for our campuses, given the behavior of our students. Cyberbullying, or the tragic events at Rutgers several years ago. We disaggregate these numbers. Not surprisingly, we see some differences by sector. The security incident linked to social networking, we had a jump in private universities this year. Seemingly, the numbers are highest in public universities and public four-year institutions. Employee misconduct, that's a stress indicator. Malfeasance, somebody's angry, somebody's stressed out, somebody's acting out because we are asking our folks to do a lot more. Yeah. And many of them have other opportunities off campus or feel captive to their jobs on campus. Remember, what was the high issue in the priorities of IT officers this past year? Hiring or retaining IT personnel for my institution. Related to security, one of the things that we've been tracking for a number of years, as many of you know, is do you have a strategic plan for IT security and disaster, IT planning for disaster? Consistently, as we've been tracking this all across the past decade, in the wake of 9/11, through Katrina, and through Sandy, what we find is roughly 25 to 30% of institutions, more so among private four-year colleges and community colleges and universities, don't have a strategic plan for IT security, don't have an IT disaster recovery plan. Having said that, the good news is among those who do, they are frequently updating these plans. That's good news. The fact that of those that do, 70% in research universities, and pretty comparable numbers, closing 80%, have either updated in the last year or in the last 24 months. Similarly, on IT disaster recovery, we see many don't, about 25 to 30% don't, varying by sector, but among those who do, they are doing that update. if you ever needed a reminder about the need for that, we certainly had one that in the, earlier this, in the last two and a half, in the last week or two, in terms of the arrival of Sandy. Related to security as well, let me touch a little bit. Notification came to us in the wake of the tragic events at Virginia Tech and elsewhere. We went from almost no campuses having notification services to virtually all campuses that participate in the survey, not only having them, but buying them from third-party providers. One of the key issues is, well, I've tracked this over the last several years, it seems to me that technology is the easy part of notification, buying the service. The hard part is the planning. Do you have the scripts done? Who gets to pull the trigger and fire the alert? And the other part, which should be easy, but hasn't been, is changing the campus policy from opt-in to opt-out. The system is useless, or near useless, if only a third of your target population of students, faculty, and staff have registered. You're not getting the benefit of your investment. And at least as I check with legal counsel, and my go-to person on this is Tracy Matrano at Cornell, who many of you know. She's also one of my fellow bloggers at Inside Higher Ed. Tracy assures me that there is nothing in FERPA or any of the other acronyms that govern us about privacy and security that prohibit campuses from going to opt out from opt in. And again, in terms of, since many campuses have gone to these services in anticipation of the worst case scenario, and let us be frank, in anticipation that they may have to, it's a CYA strategy in some instances, because they know they will be at risk without it if the worst should happen. They also may be at risk if, in fact, they continue the opt-in as opposed to opt-out. The good numbers is that they've been going down. The bad news is they're not. They need to be flipped, and they need to be flipped quickly. So if you are in that decision-making role on campus or your provider, that should happen fast. Deploying, we're still deploying them primarily for emergency, a little bit for weather. These data, however, froze the day before Sandy took apart the East Coast. So let's talk about clouds and the movement to cloud computing. We've been talking about the clouds for a long time. It was 4 years ago that EDUCAUSE published The Tower in the Cloud, talking about all the benefits we would accrue when we moved a lot of our technology resources to the cloud. And last year, when we first asked about have you moved, and this year again, we're seeing that there's not much movement. The survey data again this year confirm what we saw last year, a kind of a model or a typology based on the notion of low-hanging fruit. There are clearly low, middle, and high clouds in the conversation about technology and cloud computing. The low clouds are mail and calendar, particularly mail. That game is over and done, largely because of Microsoft and Google. Campuses are getting rid of student email, although they are less willing to give away faculty and administrative email, I suspect primarily because of the issue of branding and e-discovery. And also let us acknowledge that, in fact, that email is no longer a rite of transition for our undergraduates, particularly as it was 10 or 20 years ago. They have email accounts. That's how they apply to college. They no more want to give up their email branding than they want to get a new cell phone number when they move to another county or another state when they move to college. That's part of their identity. So why not let somebody else do it for us? Middle clouds, again, CRM, and the high clouds and the high-value clouds, where we can realize the best gains on performance and potentially the best gains on leveraging money for redeployment, we are barely tapped, and that would be HPC, storage, and ERP. We added a new question to the survey this year about, well, really, is the cloud important? Three different versions of that question. Is it does cloud computing provide a viable strategy for my ERP? You see that strong number saying yes. Will it play an increasingly important role in our ERP strategy? Large proportions, almost upwards of 70% saying yes. And will it be an important part of our campus strategy to reduce costs? Again, large numbers saying yes. This is strikingly different to a similar set of questions we used to ask for a number of years about open source and ERP. And there what we found was affirmative ambivalence. Some of you may recall this from past presentations. Is open source potentially part of our strategy downstream? Yes. Is it viable in the coming couple of years? No. 60% said, yeah, it'll get here eventually, open source ERP, but we're not that interested in it yet. Here we have a clear statement from CIOs, from IT officers, that cloud strategy, particularly for ERP, is going to be very important. And yet when we look to see where are we migrating, again, well, email is over and done. Calendar and LMS were running about two-fifths. CRM, approaching 20%. And then the ones that offer the greatest return on the investment for performance, productivity, and cash, we have barely begun to make progress. ERP, high-performance computing, and storage. Disaggregated by sector, we see some pop in terms of LMS, and many of the LMS providers have offered a cloud strategy for several years. Interestingly, community colleges are the ones that have moved fastest to the cloud, according to the survey data this year. ERP moves very slowly. It's highest in public four-year institutions. That may reflect multi-campus systems in some ways and the providers. But I want to go on record here, as I did last year. One of the challenges of going to ERP is that the ERP providers in higher education have been very slow in their offering of cloud services to the campus community. Compared to the deployment of cloud in the corporate and consumer sector, we're not seeing much yet. We've seen very little. And yet when we look at analog services and functions, you want to talk about something that's complex, the most it might be student information systems. That's the mother of all complexity in terms of a lot of the stuff that we do on campus. Think about your checking account. Think about your credit account, card account. Probably not a bad reference point to saying student transcripts, credit card, and banking. If it's being done in one, why can't it be done in the other? When will that begin to happen? And we're seeing HPC research in HPC getting better, primarily in research institutions, but even here the numbers are low. And some of the hiccup of that may actually reflect back to security issues because of the breach of third-party providers. And also, so there's some initiatives this way, and there have been some presentations here about Internet 2 providing these. We're not getting that act together. We're not leveraging those things. Interestingly, of the three high-value targets, ERP, HPC, and storage, I'm a bit befuddled why the storage game isn't over already. That one would seem to be the most obvious and the easiest in terms of leveraging value from the cloud, and we see that the numbers are very low in terms of the survey data. Many of you are investing in lecture capture. You continue to tell us that lecture capture is an important part of our campus plan for developing and delivering instructional content. Those numbers are very high. Those numbers went up again a little bit this year. Lecture capture and podcasting, the numbers are relatively low in terms of the percentage of campus of college courses that are being captured by lecture capture or podcasting, but they're continuing to go up a little bit across all sector. CIOs still believe that the future bodes well for digital content and e-books, that e-book content will be an important resource for instructional resources in the over the next 5 years, and platforms possibly, but not quite as much as the content. And yet we know we are still in the early stages of the migration to digital curricular resources. The data to this point is all over the map. Students do, they don't like digital textbooks. These things work, they don't work. They do, they don't deliver about higher performance, higher value, lower cost. There's a survey that CourseMart sponsored that suggested students like them. There's student data from Student Monitor that says students don't like them because they have not delivered on the value of interactivity. They're expensive. Some of my random walks through the marketplace comparing full-priced, used, rental, digital suggests that the least expensive model for large core undergraduate courses still is buy the used book and sell it back. You can bring your net cost down to about $10 in some instances, where a rental book might be $60 and a digital book, which you don't get to keep, may be even more expensive. Some of that's posted on the Digital Tweed blog. So we're still in the early stages of this conversation, hopefully to realize the value that we'd like to see from digital content and the conversations we're having with publishers, broadly defined, in terms of digital curricular resources. We are seeing a little bit more interest in the use of Creative Commons. We've seen some state initiatives about this as it plays out. Lots of issues in terms of the institutional endorsement as opposed to what that means for individual faculty members as the IP owners and the IP producers. And let's take a moment to talk about MOOCs. How many of you have taken a MOOC course? How many of you think MOOCs are not many? I'm seeing, 20 hands out of a group of 200. What's the polling online? Can we poll the folks online taking MOOC courses, moderator? Moderator, can we poll the folks online? I guess we can. No way to poll the folks online. We'll come back to them in a moment. But there's certainly been a big buzz about MOOCs over the past year. The New York Times has been writing favorably about them, even as their foray into online education. The Knowledge Network was rolled up and closed this past year. The articles in the New York Times of elsewhere has probably been creating havoc for some of you as your trustees read in the New York Times that MOOCs are a good thing. The conservative columnist David Brooks and the liberal columnist Tom Friedman both blessed MOOCs earlier this year. We're seeing these initiatives with Stanford and others saying we got to get on the MOOC wagon. I think for some of us who remember the dot-com era, this seems painfully familiar. The assumption that syllabi, servers, and people on the other side of screens will be an easy ka-ching for online education. We know that's not quite the case. My own take on this is that they look a lot more like Oprah's book club than they look like course credits. It's an investment in human capital, and we have all kinds of issues about revenue. Oops, sorry, I'm supposed to be here today. Well, this is not good. All right. And when we asked the CIOs with a new item on the survey, do MOOCs offer a viable model for the delivery of online instruction? Over half said yes. What about the revenue from MOOCs? Less certain. How many of you think MOOCs offer a viable revenue model? I see one hand in the house. How's that going to happen, sir? So we're going to pay for certification, okay? We will see how this is going to play out. At least by the conventional metrics that our institutions use for accreditation, MOOCs don't perform so well, as many of you know. Andrew Negg, talking about his experience at Coursera, he had a presentation at Stanford earlier this year. Over 100,000 students registered for his course. About half vanished after the first 2 weeks. Barely 20,000 completed, and maybe 10,000 qualified for whatever the certificate was. And what do you do with the certificate? If you're a member of Oprah's book club, you can't take your membership card into an employer's office and say you're a liberal arts graduate, not to say you haven't benefited, not to say you haven't benefited from the MOOC. I think we have a long way to go, a movement from cup to lip in the conversation about credits and certification and the cash behind these models. But they're playing havoc with the conversations on many of our campuses. Witness what happened at the University of Virginia. Article in the New York Times this summer suggests that MOOCs and Clay Christensen's recent book may have played some role in the backroom conversations that led to the departure and then the return of the president. I want to touch on social media very quickly. Do you have a campus presence? We've seen these numbers go up for Facebook and Twitter from 2009 to 2012. Other media, in the conversation about MOOCs, large numbers of campuses are posting full courses on YouTube, so I think 400 or 500, and over 1,000, according to an email query that I sent to Apple, are doing full courses on YouTube. And if you want to know the first MOOC, the best I've been able to determine, the first MOOC was actually in 1957, when CBS, in partnership with New York University, broadcast an English literature course in metropolitan New York at 7 o'clock in the morning. 177 NYU students enrolled in that course for credit, and 120,000 New Yorkers across the tri-state area followed that course online for non-credit. So while we think these are the new, in fact, it looks more like they're a continuation of the conversation we're having about online education. But coming back to the issue of managing social media, one of the interesting questions, and again, this is new for this year, how are you managing? Who's in charge of the social media message for your institution? We see very different patterns across institutions. In universities, largely there's a tremendous amount of autonomy to the units, admissions, athletics, undergraduate programs, individual departments. In contrast, we see community colleges far more command and control on the part of the institution in terms of managing the message and managing the policy and monitoring what's going out over social media. Let me turn to LMSs very quickly. I mentioned that we're seeing, again, it's a volatile market transition. Blackboard's numbers fell to about 45% this year, down from 57% in 2010, 2 years ago, and 71%. Others are coming in. I'm on record some years ago describing this as a mature market, meaning everybody has one, with immature products, and that's a recipe for volatility, and we're certainly seeing that. How many of you have recently flipped or have engaged in an assessment of your LMS? I'm trying to see hands. So I'm saying maybe about a quarter to a third of you. 70% of the survey respondents this year said that they would probably go into some sort of review. In some cases, that will be a serious review for lots of different reasons. Some are still on older versions of Blackboard, which will term out. Angel has been extended. How many of you, some are still on old versions of WebCT, and that will expire shortly. Others are because, well, we've been on the same platform for a long time. The landscape has changed. Let's take a look. But Blackboard is still the largest provider, and they're still the largest provider to large institutions along the way. Mobile, I mentioned, we've seen big gains in these numbers from 2010 to 11 and 11 to 2012. CIOs say that mobile apps are an important part of our campus plan to enhance instructional resources and services. Those numbers are high. And then actually activating mobile apps, we've seen, again, big jumps the last 2 years, the percentage that have activated or will activate in the current year. This isn't part of the technology entitlement. You know, for those of you who flew into Denver, by the time you got from the gate to the time you got to the shuttle and the time you got downtown, you could have downloaded any one of a number of mobile apps to help you navigate different parts of Denver. And yet many campuses don't have analog services for their students. This is another indicator of the consumerization. And the mobile app is not about the LMS, although the LMS and Blackboard was really the first provider. This is about moving the portal from bookmarks on your screen to buttons on your smartphone. It's a service function. And increasingly, it's a sense of entitlement along the BYO, bring your own device, and unlimited access to all kinds of broadband and streaming. Let me turn also then finally to the use of anti-plagiarism software. We see these numbers are high in terms of the percentage of campuses that have these licenses. On the other hand, the percentage of courses that actually use it is low. Our data suggests about 13% to 15%, depending on sector, and a lot of that may be because it's concentrated primarily in large, lower division classes. So let me end my part of the presentation just with a couple of thoughts about some key IT issues. I talked earlier about the mixed rating on the effectiveness of IT investments. This is not good news, and you can't explain it away about overpromised, underperformance. Oh, everybody thinks it's good, but it's not very good. We have to be very good on this. And the reason we, on campus and the technology providers, have to be very good in terms of the way our presidents and our provosts and our CIOs rate the effectiveness is because we are dependent upon this stuff. And again, we see lots of examples of this stuff being incredibly effective in the corporate and the consumer market. And others can turn to those markets and say it's working well there. Why isn't it working well on campus? Some of this also may be that classic line from Cool Hand Luke, the failure to communicate that IT officers have not done. None of you, of course, but perhaps some of your colleagues or counterparts elsewhere. We have not done an effective job of communicating the effectiveness of the investments in IT, in instruction, in operations and information systems and analytics. And we need to do better. And that should be a real partnership in terms of technology users on campus and technology providers. Because if not, we're all in deep trouble on this issue. We have to do better. We have to be more thoughtful. And we have to be in conversation with other users on campus, and particularly presidents, provosts, and cabinet members, to convey the effectiveness of what we're doing. And ask questions, what are we doing well, and what do we need to do better? And how do we connect the dots? Continuing impact of budget cuts, absolutely playing havoc with many of us, as many of you, as you know. It's the compounding consequences. The demand for resources has not diminished even as budget resources have. We are struggling to meet rising expectations, and that creates stress on budgets, on units, and on individuals. And I don't know when that's going to get better, because we know the demand isn't going to go away. We know that new things are perpetually on the horizon. The sense of entitlement will only increase. As more of our institutions go into online education or hybrid courses, that will raise the demand. As more of us go into analytics, that's going to place more demand in terms of various aspects of the IT infrastructure. Something is going to break, and I hope it does, or something has the potential to break. I hope it doesn't. Finally, where are the clouds? So why this delay again? Part of this, again, I would say, is the providers. You know, higher education in terms of ERP, we have a very small number of providers. Individually and collectively, they have been slow to bring us cloud offerings for our ERP. At the same time, many CIOs don't trust their ERP providers on cloud or moving to the cloud. Trust is the coin of the realm. And the fact that there are some hiccups elsewhere, in the corporate community on cloud makes us a little bit more reticent, particularly in the issue of trusting other people with our data. And some of us don't want to give up, none of you, of course, but some of your peers don't want to give up the empires to others, thinking it's outsourcing as opposed to added value. I think the case study in terms of moving to the cloud may well be LMS. With that, let me thank you again for those of you who completed the survey. For those of you who didn't, let me encourage you to complete it next year. All these slides will be posted to Campus Computing tomorrow morning, campuscomputing.net. Thank you. And with that, I believe we have time for some questions. Perhaps, are there some coming in from our online audience? One question from the online audience. Let's go to that person first. What's the online? I'm sorry, one person? One person took a MOOC. I thought you said one person's listening online. You're all going to watch the video, aren't you? Teresa.
Perceptions between the CIOs and the leadership on our campuses. So I was thinking as you were talking about, okay, I could communicate the value of our ERP implementation, for example, and that would require some measurement of effectiveness. Are you aware of where we might determine a standard for effectiveness measures for ERP implementations?
So am I aware of what metrics we might use? You know what? Fortunately, I can say that's beyond my area of expertise. I'm going to punt. But having said that, let me step into it. Yeah, but let me step into it. I think in some ways this is like art. I know what I like, or if I get risque, pornography. I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. Justice Potter Stewart's comment in the 1957 classic case about pornography. And I think for many presidents and provosts, they see we're spending a lot of money on these systems, and they have a very baseline metric. I can't get the data that I need in a format that I want when I need it. Help me understand it so I can convey it to others. If you're the president of a public institution, meaning to my board, locally elected, to the state system, to others, to other constituencies, and they see too many examples of this elsewhere. I mean, those of you who read the Wall Street Journal, or your presidents or provosts who occasionally read the Wall Street Journal, may have noticed that I think for the last year, Salesforce has owned the lower right-hand corner of the front page of the front section of the Wall Street Journal. And each week, they have a different CEO from a different firm in a different industry sitting with a tablet, saying, I have all the information I need at my fingertips to manage my enterprise. I don't know a lot of presidents that feel that way. I think, again, that's another indicator, Teresa, of the consumerization. So, you know, in one sense, it's hard to define, but they know they don't feel that they're getting it. And I think part of that is many of you I know are asking, and they may not be able to define it, but we need to have those conversations, as opposed to, here's the analytic package, this is all the great stuff it does, it's got all this stuff embedded in it, you know, it solves the iPads issues for us, solves the state reporting issues for us. That may solve sort of base level stuff, but it may not be the stuff that they want or need. If we're doing it well, we will generate a lot of demand and a lot of appreciation. I hope that's a helpful answer. Other questions or comments, folks? Otherwise, we're all going to go to the bar. That's supposed to be a joke. Please.
I have a question about your market share data.
Please, if you would identify yourself so we could all make inappropriate inferences while you ask the question.
Right. Mike Keough with Janus.
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear you.
Mike Keough.
And the company or your affiliation?
With Janus, an investor in Dow.
Okay.
Your market share data within the LMS space,
yeah.
Is that based on number of universities or like a percent of students?
No, that's based on institutions. And that's based on the institutions that participate. And moreover, it's based on, do you have a single product LMS standard, which most institutions do. Now, for the small number, generally in aggregate under 10% who don't, those numbers, typically where the divide is, as many of you know, there's one LMS on campus and another LMS that might be used for the online program. Okay. Going once, going twice, we're all going to run off to the reception and cash in our drink tickets, right? Well, then, for those of you who are here today and those of you online, again, my thanks for your time this afternoon. My thanks to those of you who completed the survey, and at the risk of redundancy, those of you who didn't, please join us for an adventure in data when the 2013 Campus Computing Survey invitation shows up in your email in September 2013. Thanks very much, folks.